What's up, sports fans, and welcome into another edition of the Valley Experience podcast. Alongside Logan Lober, I'm Ryan Pasesnik. And Logan, it's been a while since we last did our podcast, but with school wrapping up, we finally have some time to be able to do so. And it's great to be back with you on the show.
Yeah, it is great to be back. And it's a great time to be back. And we got a really exciting episode that we're looking forward to coming up. We have an interview with Jesse Friedman of PHNX. He's the Diamondbacks beat reporter for PHNX. And, we are really excited to have him on the show. He's gonna, be able to provide a lot of insight on what this offseason has brought for the Diamondbacks. And, we're gonna get into all of that. Jesse was at the winter meetings reporting on the Diamondbacks. So, we're definitely going to talk about what the Diamondbacks have done up to this point and also what's to come. So, it's just going to be a really exciting episode that we're looking forward to. And I think you guys are really going to like this one.
Absolutely. It's a great time also to be a Diamondbacks fan, given the success that they had this season. And they're certainly looking to build off of that success moving into the near future. We're going to also be talking about some key signings that the Diamondbacks made, most notably Suarez from the Mariners, and of course, Eduardo Rodriguez from the Tigers to go and bolster up their third base and pitching rotations, respectively. We're also going to be diving into the Shohei Ohtani news. Of course, you know that he signed with the Dodgers and how that's going to affect the Diamondbacks. But we have lots in store for you this episode, and we can't wait to get to it. All right, Jesse, thank you so much for being here on the podcast. Great to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. Glad we could finally make it work. I know we were trying to make this happen like way back in October, and then the Diamondbacks somehow found their way to the World Series, which put a little bit of a damper in our plans. But hey, I don't think two people were mad about that. So glad glad we could make it work now after the fact.
Absolutely. I mean, and we have to just like, take a moment to appreciate that run that they had, because I don't think anybody expected them to go on that type of monumental run that we just witnessed. And it would have been nice for them to get championship number two, but at the same time as well, I think that the future is bright for the franchise.
100%. Yeah, I can't. There was a moment during the World Series, I've said this on our show, where I very much thought the Diamondbacks were going to win the World Series. Like after game two, seeing what Merrill Kelly did, the way that they just came back from a really tough loss in game one, a game that they, I don't know if I would say should have won, but very much could have won, right? They had a lead late there. Paul Sewald gives up the two-run homer. They give up another home run in extra innings, wind up losing that game. But to bounce back the way that they did in game two with such a dominant performance. And yeah, I mean, with how good Merrill Kelly pitched throughout the postseason, and Zach Gallen certainly wasn't himself, for much of it. But I think there was always a confidence that he could turn things around. And Nathan Eovaldi didn't necessarily pitch all that great in game one for the Rangers either. So yeah, it just seemed like, I mean, on paper, the Rangers had the advantage that I think they had the better roster from the beginning, but it seemed like the Diamondbacks were just this unstoppable force. And unfortunately for D-backs fans, they were stoppable when all was said and done. But it was an incredible ride. And yeah, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, I mean, maybe you're a little disappointed, but I mean, the D-backs just were in the World Series, like after just barely making it into the playoffs. I mean, what an incredible year this was for them.
And then, obviously, with them making it to the World Series, they had a very good team. But, unlike most World Series teams, they kind of entered the offseason with, some pretty big needs that needed to be addressed. And, they already have addressed a couple of those needs with, making the trade for Suarez and, signing Eduardo Rodriguez to that contract. But, there's still a couple other stuff that needs to be addressed. And, obviously, we're going to get into that. But I know last night, Ken Kendrick said, he expect this year's team to have the highest payroll in franchise history. So, with you being at the winter meetings, like, did you feel like the D-backs were, in a lot of these conversations when it comes to, whether it's the trade market or the free agent market?
Yeah, it's definitely seemed from the beginning like the Diamondbacks were looking to be aggressive this offseason. And I didn't know exactly, to what extent that was going to go. Like, were the Diamondbacks actually, are they actually having conversations about Blake Snell Like probably not at this point, right? I mean, you know, now they have Eduardo Rodriguez. I think we can pretty clearly say that, you know, that the very top of the market is not in question. But at the same time, it you know, this franchise in the past has, you know, at times kind of pushed the chips in, and at times, you know, not spent as much as, you know, I know fans would probably like to see them spend. And there are some, you know, obviously some differences financially between where the Diamondbacks are at and where some of the bigger market teams stand out there. But yeah, you know, I think Nick Pecoro from the Arizona Republic reported that he thought the D-backs had around $20 million to spend, something like that, that being after the Eugenio Suarez move was made. And then they went out and got Eduardo Rodriguez, who's making an average of $20 million a year. I guess it's a little bit backloaded. It's just $14 million in 2024. But I don't think I buy that the D-backs only have $6 million more to spend. My sense of the situation is there's still probably, you know, a DH to be had there, you know, a JD Martinez type, a Justin Turner type, someone that, you know, can really add some thump into the middle of the lineup. I think that's something that's probably at the top of the priority list. And beyond that, I mean, Mike Hazen even yesterday talked about still being in on the starting pitching market. And of course, still, you know, looking at relievers, I'm sure they'd like to add some depth there as well. So I don't know how many of these things get done. I don't know if they can do everything that they would maybe want to do, but it definitely seems like there's still some movement to be had here.
Yeah, you know, you guys, you just mentioned like the DH position, which obviously would be a position of need for them at this point to just go and bolster their, you know, hitting lineup as well. Just realistically, like Logan and I listed a few names here, and we're just curious to see like which one, realistically speaking, would you see like, you know, the Diamondbacks really going after. We've listed JD Martinez, Justin Turner, and Jorge Soler. Obviously, like there's the connection with JD Martinez there, given that he was a Diamondback at one point. Justin Turner, despite him being like 38 or 39, he still had a really solid season with Boston. And then Jorge Soler, I mean, you talk about another guy who can really rake the fences as well. But out of those three guys that I just listed there, like, would you probably see like Martinez being the most viable option for the Diamondbacks? Or is it also possible for them to get a guy like Turner or Soler?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, it does seem like there's a level of interest in all three of those guys. So I don't think any of them are completely off the table. Those are all totally reasonable names. I'm inclined to think that the most affordable player is the most likely, which I believe would be Justin Turner. He's a guy you could definitely get on a one-year contract. As you said, he had a pretty good season in 2023, which is really remarkable, just the way that Justin Turner just continues to get older and just continues to like still be able to hit. Looking at some of the underlying numbers with Justin Turner, I'm not sure he's like a well above average hitter at this point. Like, I don't know if I would count on that going into 2024, but is he a big upgrade over what the D-backs would currently have at DH? Yeah, he would be a big upgrade for them for sure. So I think that makes sense. But yeah, like I said before, I think they still, there seems to be a desire here to be kind of aggressive in, you know, how they improve this team. So even though he's the most affordable guy, I think JD Martinez is very much an option as well. The big question there for me is, does it take 2 years to get JD Martinez, or is it possible to get him for just 1 year? I would understand if they had some trepidation about going to 2 years on a guy who, you know, he is just a DH. He's kind of been that for a few years. And he was really good in 2023 for the Dodgers. I mean, I looked at his numbers again the other day and my mind was blown. Like, the guy drove in 103 runs and hit 33 homers, even though he missed like a third of the season. Like, if you extrapolate that to a whole season, he's hitting like 45 bombs and driving 130 or something. It's like, wow, this is like peak JD Martinez in his mid-30s. So yeah, I'm sure that they would love to bring JD Martinez here. But he's also the kind of player where at this stage of his career, you know, he struck out kind of a lot last year or this past year, even though some of the numbers were good. There's some risk with JD Martinez where there could come a point where the swing and miss is just so much that, you know, he doesn't have the ability to square up the baseball like he used to. You know, there could be a tipping point where suddenly he's just not a very valuable hitter anymore. And a team that's signing him is betting on him being a valuable hitter for two more seasons. And, you know, you're probably paying $16 million, $18 million a year something along those lines for each of those seasons, which is a big investment. Solaire, I would maybe say, in my mind, would be the least likely of the three. I think it's going to take a 3-year contract probably to get Jorge Solaire, maybe four, probably three. And I don't know if the D-backs would want to go that long term with someone in this spot. The DH spot has been kind of a revolving door for them. I think they like the idea of having a true DH, but I think they also like the idea of being able to use that spot for other guys, especially as think about Ketel Marte as he continues to age. Is there come a point where you want him in that DH spot rather than having to man second base? So I don't know if they would want to lock themselves in for 3 years into a guy who's best uses a DH. So that would maybe be at the bottom of the list for me. But yeah, I think all three of those guys are totally, totally realistic.
That's an interesting point that you made about, like, you know, the Diamondbacks and their revolving door around DH, because there have also been a couple of guys that have been inserted into the lineup just as a DH, even though they play in the outfield. And those are two guys in Lourdes Gurriel and Tommy Pham. I mean, two guys who, I mean, Pham, you know, was an instrumental piece for the Diamondbacks at the deadline. And Lourdes was just on a tear. I mean, he did have that slump really after he got injured after the Tigers series, but still nonetheless, he had some solid contributions for the team. I'm just curious though, like specifically focusing on Lourdes and Tommy Pham, do you see, like, you know, the Diamondbacks potentially looking at bringing those guys back?
Yeah, I kind of have dismissed it from the beginning, and I think I wouldn't completely rule it out. I think it is possible. I would be pretty surprised if it happened. I think with Lourdes, you're looking at a 3-year, possibly 4-year contract at this point. And he was a good player for the D-backs in 2023, but I don't know as he gets into his 30s if he's a guy that you want on the books for quite that long. He was a little bit above average as a hitter this past year. But, you know, as you said, there was a pretty elongated slump in there. He's always been a streaky hitter, so this is nothing new for Lourdes. I mean, I think in May, you know, you could argue he should have won the NL Player of the Month award because he was just an absolute monster. And then, yeah, he'll kind of go a couple months where he just doesn't hit all that much. That's kind of the way that Lourdes's career has gone. Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I do think that, you know, it's not just a DH. I think they're looking at outfielders as well. That would certainly be one way to fill that need. I don't know if I see it happening, though, with that, you know, as long of a commitment as it would take at this point. Tommy Pham, I think, is probably more realistic, just as the D-backs are kind of trying to fill things out. I know Tommy Pham is very much looking for a full-time job somewhere. He doesn't want to platoon. He wants to play every day if he can find that opportunity. And I think there's a chance that, you know, he kind of sees what's out there on the market and comes back to the D-backs and is like, hey, I kind of want to just come back here, you know, and see if we can run this thing back and how far we can go in 2024. That's probably a 1-year contract, you know, I think financially would be a pretty, you know, reasonable investment for them to make. And he would still fill a need for them. You know, if they're able to get a DH, you could put Tommy Pham in the outfield. He's not the best outfielder, but in a corner, he can do okay for himself. Or the other way around, if the D-backs get an outfielder and they have some resources left over to get a DH, Tommy Pham would be a guy where you could slide in, and he's not, you know, you're not going to expect an 850 OPS, but you can probably expect him to be better than, you know, who the Diamondbacks would have in that spot in his place. So I think Tommy Pham would make more sense. I wouldn't count on either of those things happening, but I could see Pham returning to the Diamondbacks in certain scenarios.
You know, we don't have to talk about this for too long just because this, you know, is a D-backs podcast and I don't like talking about this team, but you know, the Dodgers,
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously a couple of days ago, we found out that the Dodgers are still the Dodgers and, you know, they're going to just get the best free agent on the market. And I know it came out today that, you know, they're in talks with the Rays and Tyler Glass now, but, you know, at the winter meetings, like, I know Ohtani kept this whole thing like very quiet, but like, did you feel like this was, you know, going to end up happening and Ohtani was going to crush our dreams after we swept the Dodgers?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, right? You're a Diamondbacks fan and you go in, you sweep the Dodgers, you do the thing, and then the Dodgers turn around and sign the most talented player, arguably, in Major League history. You know, a little deflating. I definitely understand that. My sense of the situation, which turned out to be wrong, was that Ohtani is just this mysterious guy. People have a hard time understanding what he wants. He doesn't really communicate what he wants to much of anyone. There's obviously this weird hush-hush to his entire free agency process. I was sort of in my head betting on him going somewhere else. I guess if you had asked me like Dodgers or the field, I would have taken the field. Not that like the Dodgers was an unlikely outcome, but I don't know. It felt too easy. Like it felt too obvious. Like Ohtani doesn't do that. He signed with the Angels, right? Like that's not on brand for him. But at the end of the day, it was the decision that made the most sense. And I think we all knew that from the beginning. If Ohtani wants to win, you know, it seemed like he might have had some desire to be on the West Coast. I don't know if that was overstated, but you know, he's basically just moving across town. It's a pretty easy situation for him. And he gets to be part of a lineup with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. Like if I were Shohei Ohtani, I would have signed with the Dodgers. I mean, I don't think it would have even taken me this long. Like, I mean, it probably would have been a pretty easy decision. So yeah, I'm not surprised by it, but yeah, I mean, it is indicative of this issue in baseball where, you know, only a select few teams have access to a player like that. I think it, you know, you could argue it's more teams than maybe how many teams were actually in on these conversations. But, you know, should the Diamondbacks have gone in and signed Shohei Ohtani for, you know, a bizarro contract? We were paying $68 million a year after, you know, potentially after he retires. I don't know if that's the best investment for them. So it's a tough outcome for Diamondbacks fans, but I'm not, at the end of the day, looking back, I'm like, yeah, I probably should have just known that this is what he was gonna do. I think I just tried to, you know, I tried to be a little too smart with it, and he just made the obvious choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's no surprise that I agree. Like, I don't think it should really be a surprise that Ohtani signed with the Yankees of the West and the Dodgers. Because at this point now, I mean, you just look at him being in with the Angels ever since the beginning of his Major League Baseball career. Like, the one thing that they failed to do is surround him with winning talent and put a winning team around him. It just sucks too, because yeah, I mean, you know, the Diamondbacks are riding high off of this great momentum with them beating the Dodgers in the postseason, and then they just got to rip our hearts out and make this move, which I'm just curious to get your thoughts on that. Because like, with a guy like Ohtani, I mean, there's probably a chance that he's going to be a hitter this upcoming season as well, because there's no way that he can throw. But just like adding him to that lineup of, like, you know, Gonsolin and May and Bueller, I mean, granted that they're injured right now at the moment, like, should the Dodgers have immediate success with Ohtani, you know, in his first year, or do you think it's going to take a little bit of time?
Yeah, in his first year, given that he's not going to pitch, I don't know if the impact will necessarily be all that great. I might totally look dumb saying this when all is said and done, because Ohtani was really good offensively in 2023. But I just think about JD Martinez, who we were talking about earlier, and how good he was in the DH slot for the Dodgers this last year. Like, that has a you know, that I mean, that has a big impact on how much Ohtani is going to change things for them, right? If they were using a designated hitter who had a, you know, a 750 OPS or something, and they're replacing that with Ohtani, then yeah, I mean, that's a huge upgrade. But you look at the year that Martinez had in the DH slot for the Dodgers this past season compared to Ohtani's career stats, and the numbers actually aren't all that different. I think there's a world in which Ohtani steps in and has a great year. But you know, is not necessarily giving the Dodgers five or six more wins next year. It might be more like, you know, two or three more wins, depending on how things turn out. But again, he was outrageously good in 2023. He was significantly better than JD Martinez in 2023. So it's not like that's an impossible outcome where he comes in and it's just an enormous improvement for them. But you know, I don't think it's necessarily a given that if you have an elbow surgery, which we don't know if it's Tommy John or exactly what it was. I think we kind of assume it's Tommy John. But coming after a surgery like the one that he just had, where he's going to miss an entire season of pitching, I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that his hitting will not be affected at all. I think there is some world in which it takes Ohtani a little while to find his groove offensively, much like we saw Bryce Harper this year with the Phillies, where at the beginning, it looked like his power had been zapped a little bit. And then as time went on, of course, he started to look more like Bryce Harper. So I think it's possible that Ohtani has a really good year, but, you know, winds up not actually, maybe makes more of a difference off the field and you know, the brand building of the Dodgers than he does on the field, you know, adding a whole bunch of wins to their total in 2024.
All right, that's enough of that. I wanted to take a look at the starting rotation. You know, it seems like after Eduardo Rodriguez, the Diamondbacks have their top four pretty much solidified with Gallen, Kelly, Rodriguez, and Brandon Pfaadt. But there still is that number five spot, you know, with the in-house options that they have. You know, Tommy Henry is going to be coming back, Ryan Nelson, you know, you could throw Slade Ciccone in there. I mean, I also Dre Jameson, but I don't know how long. I'm sure he's going to miss the majority of the season, unfortunately. But, you know, there's also, you know, some of the, like, the free agent options available. I know I was thinking Seth Lugo, but he signed yesterday with the Royals. But, you know, I know there's been some links with Lucas Giolito. Do you see the D-backs going out and adding another guy, or do you think it's going to be more of an in-house battle in spring training for that number five spot?
I think the in-house battle is the more likely outcome. As I said earlier, Mike did talk yesterday about still looking at starting pitching. So I don't think they're out of this market, but hitting is the clear top priority for them at this point. They're not going to go sign a starting pitcher that keeps them from getting a bat, which I think is definitely the greater need for them right now. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's impossible that they make another addition there, but I'd be fairly surprised. I think this is probably the group that you're entering the season with. And yeah, it's not a bad group. I mean, that number five spot, you feel in spring training, you know, have a competition between those few guys. Mike did say yesterday that he talked about Tommy Henry and how, you know, incumbency matters, and Tommy Henry certainly proved the most in the starting rotation in 2023, just given that he actually made, you know, 17, 18 starts, whatever it was, and put up pretty good numbers. Ryan Nelson certainly showed flashes of being effective, but struggled with consistency. Slade Ciccone and Bryce Jarvis, I imagine, would be in there as well, as you mentioned. But yeah, I think Tommy Henry probably has the leg up in that race. But of course, you know, he's coming off an elbow injury of his own, and he'll have to come in and you know, still look good and look like the pitcher who pitched pretty well in 2023.
Yeah, and then, you know, I wanted to also talk about a couple guys who, you know, I don't really know what 2024 is going to look like for them. And the first guy that I wanted to bring up is Jake McCarthy. You know, 2 years ago, you know, when Corbin Carroll got called up and the D-backs, you know, finally started to show some life, like, McCarthy was like their number three hitter, or he was in the top of the lineup for like that, you know, that second half of the year. And, you know, ultimately that led the D-backs to, you know, choosing Barshow as that odd man out, because, you know, they believed in McCarthy, Carroll, and Thomas as that outfield core. But, you know, it got off to a pretty rough start of 2023 with McCarthy. Is, you know, he was kind of up and down in the minors, and then, you know, he got injured like right before the playoffs started, and which, you know, held him out for the whole postseason, which is pretty unfortunate, because, you know, I thought he could be like a valuable piece, you know, whether it was pinch hitting late or, you know, pinch running late in those games. So, you know, I don't really know what 2024 is going to look like for Jake McCarthy. And, you know, do you think that, like, is there a world where Jake McCarthy is back as an everyday outfielder, you know, if they do go that full-time DH route in free agency?
Yeah, I think so. And this is something that I asked Mike at the winter meetings. Like, are you comfortable with having an opening day roster where all of your outfielders bat left-handed? That is sort of the situation that we're in right now, right? It's Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas, Jake McCarthy, Dominic Fletcher, I guess, would be in that mix. Pavin Smith, if you still consider him an outfielder. So yeah, and of that group, like I have to believe that Jake McCarthy would at least be the front runner for that third starting outfield spot. You know, he probably would have to earn it, I imagine. I'm sure Dominic Fletcher would get some consideration there as well. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a guarantee that the Diamondbacks get two more bats. If they just go out and get a designated hitter, that might be it, at least as far as like starting caliber players, which would mean that Jake McCarthy at least could be a starting outfielder on opening day. Which, I mean, yeah, I think that's probably what the Diamondbacks want. Like they like Jake McCarthy. They, you know, I think Mike has talked about how Jake is really the only guy out of that group of left-handed hitting outfielders that doesn't have significant splits. He tends to hit lefties pretty much just as well as he hits righties. Granted, in 2023, he didn't hit either particularly well, and that's why he got sent down a couple times. It was a rough season for him. But yeah, I think there's some belief here that, you know, he can come out this offseason. And Torrey at the winter meetings talked about just trying to impact the baseball more, just trying to do some more damage rather than, you know, kind of dinking and dunking base hits here and there. Jake is a pretty big guy, even though he doesn't always show it on the field. I think there's more power in there that could be tapped into than what he shows on a daily basis. And yeah, if he comes into spring training and you know, looks a little more like the player. I don't know if the player that we saw in 2022 was totally sustainable, frankly. I'm not sure that at the time I was like, man, I don't know if I see Jake McCarthy as being like a 300 hitter. You know, I mean, he was really good in the second half of that season. Like he
Yeah,
was
he was
really,
fantastic.
really good. So that's no disrespect to him. I just think there, you know, he needed to prove it a little bit more, and he wasn't quite able to do that in 2023, but there's still clearly some belief there that Jake can figure things out. And as of right now, I mean, it sure looks to me like he'd be an everyday player for them. You know, so hopefully for him, he's able to come into spring training and really earn that spot if it's up for the taking.
Yeah, Jesse. And then, you know, another guy that I'd also like to get into as well, and that's Jordan Lawler, because Logan and I, and I'm sure a lot of other Diamondbacks fans, had the same vibes that once he got called up, that he was going to give off the same type of Corbin Carroll vibes, where he has that instant type of impact to the team immediately. And I mean, obviously, Lawler's time, like, you know, getting called up, it was a bit of a rough start for him. You could probably make the case that he probably needs a little bit more time to develop. But I'm just curious, like he's been obviously like linked to potential Randy Arozarena trade scenarios to the Diamondbacks, which I don't know how realistic, you know, that is. I mean, given, you know, like what the Diamondbacks would have to give up. I mean, they would have to probably give up one of their top prospects, and Lawler is that guy. But how confident are you know, in Jordan Lawler? Like, do you think that you could see him blossom into that type of player that Diamondbacks fans hope that, you know, he can turn into, or considering, you know, that his name has been linked to guys like Randy Arozarena, that he could be a valuable trade aspect in a specific scenario like that?
I mean, he'd be a valuable trade asset. There's no question about that. There's a lot of teams out there that would love to add Jordan Lawler to their team. Yeah, I would be surprised if Jordan Lawler comes out in 2024 and struggles in the same way. Like I think there's clearly an initial adjustment period that has to happen for a lot of young players, and something that Mike has talked about a lot, that Corbin Carroll kind of spoiled us. And that's not normal to come up and just immediately be, you know, immediately have like a crucial, I think it was a game tying hit and, you know, like a double into the gap in his first major league game. It's not normal to come in and just be able to have that kind of impact on day one. And Jordan Lawler is also very young. Jordan Lawler got called up about a full year younger than Corbin Carroll did. So he has, you know, he certainly has plenty of time. I think there's a lot of belief internally that he'll be fine and will be a big part of the Diamondbacks in 2024 at some point. Whether that's opening day or not, you know, remains to be seen. I wouldn't be surprised if you know, the Diamondbacks see him in spring training and they decide to send him back to Reno and try to work some things out before getting him back up to the majors. But yeah, the outlook here is certainly bright. I haven't really heard anyone who's like pushing the panic button on Jordan Lawler over 35 plate appearances. Like, you know, he clearly wasn't totally ready, but I don't think in some ways, I guess no one is. I mean, you know, it's just a really big difference between AAA pitching and major league pitching. And, you know, the adjustment's going to look different for different guys. And I don't think there's a big question that Jordan Lawler will be able to make that adjustment at some point. Now, whether that means Jordan Lawler is, you know, a Corbin Carroll level player at some point, that I don't know. Like, I don't know if Jordan Lawler is going to be, you know, if he's going to start the All-Star game. Like, I don't know if he will rise to that level in his career. I think it's very possible that he could, but I don't know if the long-term outlook here is quite on the level of Corbin Carroll. I do think the long-term outlook here is that of a productive major league player. It's just a matter of how long it takes to get there.
Do you feel like the Diamondbacks like would prefer, because I know like with a guy who has as high as expectations as Lawler does, like you would want him to get consistent like every day at bats, and like right now, like,
yeah,
I mean, I would assume at some point Lawler would take over, for whether it's at short for Perdomo or at third, but like right now, like that's not, I don't see that happening. So like, do you think the Diamondbacks would be fine with him being a bench bat to start the year, or do you think they would lean towards, even if he does have a really good spring training, do you think they would lean more towards him just starting the year in Reno just so he can play every day and develop more?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think every day at bats are a necessity, really. I don't see the point in, when the D-backs brought Jordan Lawler up, they were doing it in a way where they weren't necessarily going to give him every day at bats, right? They were going to do the platoon thing. They liked his bat against lefties more than Nick Ahmed. But that was kind of a special situation, you know, deep late in the season, you're in a playoff chase, you just like need the best lineup that you can possibly put out every day. But yeah, going into 2024, where you have a little bit more time and you have Geraldo Perdomo as a perfectly fine everyday shortstop, I don't see there being any pressure to like, oh, we got to get him in the big leagues no matter what. I think you just want every day at bats. And you know, if they feel that he's ready to get everyday at bats in the big leagues, then yeah, you know, get him in the big leagues and figure it out. I think there's a way where, you know, you could slide Perdomo to second some days, and depending on how the DH situation works out, you could have Ketel Marte DH, or you could just sort of use Perdomo as kind of a super utility guy where he's just sort of filling in all over the field. I'm sure he could still come up with a decent number of plate appearances and play pretty regularly that way as well. So yeah, I think you just want regular playing time, and it's just a matter of, you know, in spring training, do the Diamondbacks feel like he is ready to go in the big leagues to be an everyday big league shortstop? And if they don't think he's quite there, then yeah, send him to AAA. He's still extremely young. He still has plenty of time, and, you know, let him work through whatever things they decide he needs to work through, and then bring him back up later in the season when they feel he has a better opportunity to really, you know, get ingrained as an everyday player.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Geraldo Perdomo. You talk about, like, you know, just another guy that I think a lot of Diamondbacks fans probably didn't expect to have, like, the type of season that he did. Because when you look at, like, his stats in the 2022 season, they weren't the best. And, but I think, you know, to see, like, him kind of rise to that level of play, I think, like, it's kind of safe to say that the Diamondbacks are pretty much set at shortstop, like, with Perdomo in their lineup. Would you agree?
Yeah, he was Perdomo is just, he's just a fascinating player because he really doesn't impact the baseball very much at all. You know, if you look at like his Baseball Savant page, it's like deep blue and, you know, hard hit rate and average exit velo and that stuff, but then it's extremely bright red in stuff like chase rate and whiff rate. So He's a smart baseball player who really makes the most of the skills that he has, and that you just can't really get him to swing at stuff out of the zone. He doesn't swing and miss very much. Defensively, he's solid. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's not necessarily a Gold Glove caliber shortstop, but he's a pretty darn good one at the same time. So yeah, I still, you know, in the long term, is Perdomo more ideally suited for kind of that super utility role that I mentioned earlier? I think that might be like where you would ideally want him. But at the same time, if you use your everyday shortstop, like, that's not bad, right? Like, I think he's a perfectly fine everyday shortstop. You know, is he going to be an all-star again? I don't know. It seemed like, You know, maybe he had some batted ball luck in the first half of the season that wasn't really there in the second half. His numbers, you know, went down quite a bit throughout the course of the season. But yeah, he's a guy who's just a smart player who makes the most of the skills that he has. Maybe there's, I mean, he's not a super small dude. I mean, maybe there's a way that he can find a way to tap into a little bit of power, you know, start impacting the baseball a little bit more. I think that would certainly improve his profile. But yeah, if Geraldo Perdomo is your everyday shortstop, I think we certainly learned throughout the season and in the playoffs as well, where he was really good, that's a totally fine outcome. Like, he's going to take his walks. If you hit him number nine, he's going to serve as kind of that second leadoff man type. And, you know, he's not going to drive in a ton of runs for you, but he's going to get on base and he's not going to hurt you either. So he had a really good 2023 season after, as you said, 2022. Look back at those numbers. It's hard to remember that he was that player, you know, just about a year ago.
I think that's, pretty much all we got. Thanks so much for doing that. Like, this was awesome to have someone who, you know, me and Ryan, you know, can see ourselves hopefully one day doing something similar to you. So it was really fun to, you know, talk with you about the D-backs. And, you know, I'm sure if you watch our show, I'm sure you watch PHNX, but I mean, if you don't, obviously make sure to check, you know, Jesse out on there. And just thanks again for coming on. It was really fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jesse.
Yeah, guys. Also, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, you know, as well, like, you know, we love the PHNX Diamondbacks as well with you and Derek and, you know, and DJ Mackie P on there as well sometimes. But yeah, you guys do such an incredible job, you know, just covering the Diamondbacks and everything Arizona sports, and keep killing it, man. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, man, we're trying. We're doing our best. Appreciate your support and for having me. This was fun. I'm glad we could finally make it work. You know, it's for a worthy cause. But yeah, this was a good time.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Yeah, it's an honor. It's been an honor, man. Well, Logan, that was a fun show, wasn't it?
It was really fun. Yeah. Thanks again to Jesse for, you know, just for, you know, coming on and chatting with us about the D-backs. I'm really happy with how our conversation went. We talked about, you know, pretty much everything this off season, everything to do with this off season. And, you know, it's been a fun one. And I think, you know, the D-backs aren't done. So, you know, I'm expecting, you know, some more moves before spring training, and then we're right back into it. Hopefully another playoff run and just hopefully another fun season, and just, you know, really, really looking forward to this team. I'm really excited. I think they're definitely on the upward trend. So thanks again to Jesse for coming on. And, you know, obviously this is our first episode in a bit. You know, we mentioned in the beginning that we've been, pretty busy with school, but now that we're on winter break, we're hoping to get back into the groove like we were this summer when we first started this up. So, you know, just make sure to be on the lookout for more episodes in the future. We're going to hopefully be more consistent with getting those out to you guys. And, you know, just thanks for sticking with us through this little break that we're on. But obviously this was a perfect way, you know, better than I could have asked for to come back with being able to talk with Jesse. So yeah, hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Make sure to, you know, like, if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe, all that. And yeah, we will hopefully see you soon.
Absolutely, we will. And alongside Logan Lober, I'm Ryan Pesesnik. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Valley Experience Podcast. Please make sure to go and like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Valley Experience. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Valley XP. And until next time, we will see you all later.